This presentation was recorded at the 2017 Christian School Administration Institute held in Zurich, Ontario. For more information about the Institute, contact Philip Horst at philip.horst.79@gmail.com. That's philip.horst.79@gmail.com.
Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. Count it a privilege to be here. I would like to take issue with the comment about being a guest speaker. But on the other hand, when I see how many people here I don't know, I guess maybe I am. And so I do see some older individuals here that I've known for many years and maybe worked with some in bygone years, but I see a lot of new faces here. But it's a privilege to be here. You may turn in your Bibles, if you have them along, to a few scriptures to think about a little bit first. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 13. We're talking about cultivating board literacy in school curriculum. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 13. Paul writing to Timothy. In his closing comments to the book, he said, "The cloak that I left at Troas with Carpus, when thou comest, bring with thee and the books, but especially the parchments." What books? What parchments? I don't know. I would like to know, but I guess we can't answer that question. Was it parts of the Old Testament? Was it letters that he had received from others? But apparently it was materials that were helpful to him in his ministry. It was his curriculum. It was the material that he was familiar with and that would be beneficial to him. So we might say the Apostle Paul had curriculum. You may turn also to Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12. "For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat." Here we discover that there is something like milk and there is something like strong meat. Not all material is equal. There are different materials for different purposes. And also in verse 14, similar thought. "But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses," excuse me, "exercised to discern both good and evil." Again, the thought that there are different people who are at different levels of achievement and different stages of development. And consequently, what they are fed matters to them. And that's what we are looking at this morning, looking at curriculum. How do we match the people and the product? Thinking a little bit of the history of curriculum development, we are very grateful for what we have today. I'm just curious, one of the other brethren did a little bit of a survey. I'd like to just see how the times have changed. Raise your hand if you went to public school at all. All right, there's quite a few here. And raise your hand if you never went to public school. There's a lot more hands. And on the other hand, raise your hand if you went to a Christian school but you used at least some public textbooks. All right, that's interesting. That's not so many, but still quite a few. And raise your hand now if in your school today you still have any at all public textbooks. Just a very few. And I'm not saying there is no room for them, but it has changed, and it has been a good change. Just a point out, you probably read the last newsletter from Rod and Staff I'll just point out a few things, how that curriculum development started in the 1960s, and how it is just amazing to see what God has provided us with over the years. Many thought that the textbooks from the public schools could be used if you had Christian teachers. And even those who saw the need for a conservative publishing work and the ones who initially started Rod and Staff weren't really thinking about textbooks. That was not their thought. But God was working and was preparing this work. And even after Lella Burkey first produced the BNRS reader series, and that they saw that was something they could reproduce and market. But still, nobody thought of that. Actually, the goal ought to be a complete Christian school curriculum, grades 1 to 10. And but with time and effort and prayer and God's blessing, it's amazing what has happened. However, does that mean that we just open the Rod and Staff catalog and order everything that's there and here's our curriculum? Well, the fact is, it keeps changing. One reason things change is because of a changing market. The demand for material keeps shifting a little one way or the other. It's interesting how that a few years ago it became evident that it was time to reemphasize penmanship, and several publishers began to work on it. And, we're in the computer age. You just press buttons. But there is still a value in penmanship. All right, so the market, the changing demands of the market produces changing material. And someone needs to keep pace with that and decide what to do about it. I like this one little comment in here, how one customer wrote to Rod and Staff. I noticed the pony on page 38 of grade 2 Patterns of Nature has the lead rope trailing on the ground near the girl's foot. We teach our children never to do that. Well, there's something that needed to be changed. That's a dangerous situation, and you best not to even have a picture of it. So there's a little curriculum needs upgrading and changing. And then there's also new tools in publishing. You know, our textbooks today have a lot more graphics in them than they did 30, 40 years ago. And they're useful. And they help us to teach things. And a lot more photos. They're more attractive, more consistent, more legible. Modern book binding equipment makes books more durable and economical. So there's new tools that can be incorporated into the textbook, new teaching tools. And of course, we know that there's always statistical changes that need updating. And in the history books, geography books particularly, even science books possibly. There's new changes. And there's a never-ending need for new revisions and school boards that analyze those revisions and decide what shall we do with them. And interestingly, God always provides his people, provides new people with gifts. And these gifts get incorporated into new materials as well. And so it is interesting to see, and we have a responsibility, school boards have a responsibility to know how to relate to all of this. You know, the 50 years ago, whatever it was, it's about that, there was the challenge of starting schools. And the challenge that our older brethren faced finding curriculum of any sort. We used a lot of old public school materials. A lot of those science and social studies books that I remember having in school, they had no exercises with them. The teacher needed to develop his own. I remember Brother Arnold used to advocate that, you know, that's good for the teachers to be able to produce them. And it was good. but it is not efficient. And we live in an age of efficiency. But so we do appreciate the things that we have. Then as time went on, of course, you know, there's something that happened. Some of those old public school books, they weren't all bad. There was a lot of good in them. I remember things that I learned in there. But, you know, they gradually became more and more out of date. And the covers became more and more tattered. And the books that you could buy to replace them, you know, while those books maybe weren't all bad, the books that you could buy to replace them had more and more objectionable features. So it did. I remember when I was in third grade, just up the road here, and for devotions, the teachers used to sometimes have us give prayer requests. And I remember a third grader who regularly gave this as a prayer request: pray for Billy Cottle as he writes the math books. And, you know, those math books were written, and they've been rewritten, maybe more than once, I'm not sure. So curriculum has changed. As I thought about this, you know, I thought about my own children in school today, thinking of balance, one thing we did more back then, we had more Bible memory. Our curriculum was not as full, and our teachers gave us more Bible memory. Well, that wasn't all bad either. In fact, it was good. So that's part of the problem with curriculum, is we're always finding a balance in our time. What is most important? What are we going to have our students working at? So now, why should the school board, I wanted to say this, there's so much available today, even of Christian school material, that our schedules can get too tight. And school, you know, is education. We believe in education. We want our children to be prepared for life. But it is obvious as we look in the world about us that education can be overdone. And there is a limit. So what will we do? And there is so much Christian curriculum available, and we have to sort through it. What is most important in curriculum? Do all the graphics that make learning fun actually make the students lazier? We have to think about that. How much better is the revision than what we are using now? If we're a lot of the times now, we're looking at deciding whether or not to purchase a revised curriculum, something that we have already, but there's a revision available. Does the content justify the cost? Why should the school board be literate about the curriculum? Maybe that's become obvious. The board is in charge of the school. We heard that in the first topic this morning. The board is in charge, and part of that, and probably second to the teacher, is the curriculum. And it is the board's responsibility, so they have to know something about it. If the board is not in charge of the curriculum, then the teacher or teachers must be. And if you have multiple teachers in the school and each choose their own curriculum, it will certainly result in imbalance. Also, teachers can have a good bit of turnover. We heard this in the last topic about board members having a good bit of turnover. I think that could be remedied. But there is turnover. And so there does need to be a certain amount of consistency from year to year. What if this year's teacher doesn't like the science arrangement that last teacher had? Is he or she free to change it? Somebody must be in charge. The board is also in charge of the treasury, and curriculum costs money, and they are responsible for the use of it. So that is, the board does now also is responsible for the effectiveness and the influence of the school. So as was mentioned toward the close of their discussion here in the auditorium last, is that the board is in charge, and it is a problem because the board doesn't necessarily just automatically know about, are familiar with curriculum. Where does it begin? And by the way, by literacy, we're going to say we mean familiarity. We could say maybe that it means that they're thoroughly acquainted with it, and I'm going to be gracious enough to say that maybe it doesn't mean that. but it means familiar with it. That's the way we want to look at it. Thinking one of appointment of board members. That is one time to already think about curriculum. Does your school board have a balance of gifts and skills? As we heard this morning, there's some people whose job is to change the light bulbs and paint the steps, do the maintenance work. Another one keeps the books and writes the paychecks. He's the treasurer. Some are good people persons that serve well as chairman or principal. Very few are good at everything. And so I think maybe at the time when school board members are being appointed, think about this. Who takes an interest in curriculum? Sometimes we refer to people as some people are just more bookish than others. Maybe even if that person doesn't have a lot of communication skills, maybe he can't paint the steps even, but maybe he's worth something just because of the fact that he takes an interest in books. And so think about that. Is your board large enough to accommodate various skills? 5 brethren on the school board does not seem to be excessive when we think of all that there is to do and of the variety of things that there is to do. Maybe your board has too many responsibilities. That just made me think again of turn the clock back 40, 50 years ago when in this congregation there was 3 men. They were both the school board and the church trustees. And they were in new and small congregations. It may need to be that way. But let's spread the workload around. A suggestion we also heard this morning was that some things can be done, can be delegated to persons outside the school board. And that is true. And it might even be in this matter of curriculum. I would like to suggest, I was going to say this, first of all, mention maybe a few very simple ways for curriculum literacy. One is visit school. That seems to be obvious. And number 2 is read the books your children bring home. And at least look at them and take an interest in what your student children are studying. Take a look at it and ask them questions and page through it with them. And that is a very simple way to at least get a basic understanding, but I really think somebody needs to know a little more than that. And is it realistic, we might ask, that every board member is thoroughly familiar with the curriculum? Probably not. It probably just won't happen. And consequently, I'm going to spend quite a bit of time now talking about appointing a curriculum committee. And again, that apparently is not a new term here. I heard it discussed as well. So I think it is a worthwhile thing. Since not everybody is going to do it, make it the business of a few to do it well. Appoint a curriculum committee. It might consist of 1 or 2 more bookish board members, maybe as well a couple, 1 or 2 ordained brethren. And several ordained brethren can serve on this committee as well. And maybe think of, as you're thinking of your board members to serve on this committee or even outside the board, there may be someone who taught school in the past and therefore has a familiarity from that aspect. Utilize the gifts that are available. And then want to impress this, put a formal curriculum review process in place. Just appointing a committee doesn't necessarily make things happen. Appoint a time for a meeting. At a certain time of the year, we're going to have a curriculum meeting. We're going to get together for the express purpose of discussing the curriculum. Every year, even though you think everything is working fine, you have a board meeting every month, don't you? You don't just have board meeting when you have a problem, I hope. But so why not have a curriculum meeting once a year? Probably just past the middle of the year. Maybe after you know which teachers will return next year. That could make a difference. Which teachers are going to return next year and which ones won't? It could make a difference as to whether it will be a good time to introduce new curriculum. Also, it should be early enough in the year to allow time to review prospective materials, make a decision whether or not you're going to buy it, and then order it in time to get the publisher discounts. Because a lot of publishers have textbook discounts in about month of April, is that right? I think maybe. So you want to make use of them if you're going to introduce new curriculum. Prepare for the meeting. Remind the teachers several times and throughout the year to think about changes they would suggest to the curriculum. And during the course of the year, as teachers raise questions about curriculum, and couldn't we do something better than this? And I just heard about something else that's available over there, and another school is using it. Remind them, that is a question for a curriculum meeting. That is the time to discuss it, but they are certainly welcome to research it and be prepared to make their push for it and see what they can learn about it. Appoint one board member or committee member particularly to be prepared to report at this meeting on all new curriculum developments by the publishers that you normally use. Rod and Staff, EMP, CLP, Pathway, Vineyard, whoever it is, there's a certain list of publishers that you normally buy from. And someone should be appointed ahead of the meeting to be prepared to discover what is coming on the market. And just to be equipped that way. At the meeting, be sure that everyone has a copy of the entire board-approved curriculum presently in use. And you can't do that unless you, first of all, keep an official record of curriculum in use. This is the official record of just as important as meetings of board minutes, and it's to have an official record. These are the approved curriculum. If you don't have that, don't be surprised if a teacher all at once brings something to school that you really hadn't thought would be appropriate if you did not give them that kind of direction. And again, then you review that list at your meeting, review it with the teachers, and see you and discuss the questions that came up in the course of the last year. Listen to the report of new developments and think about the possibilities. What are some possibilities? New curriculums usually starts with either a need or a want. Or what we have is not satisfactory. There's a teacher who says, this is just not working for me. I'd like something different. So there we could call it a need. And so you start looking for something. Well, first of all, you decide whether or not it really is a need, whether the teacher just needs a little help to know how to use the tool properly, or is it really a need? And if there is a need, well, then you have to set to work and see if you can find something better. Or else it starts with a want that somebody saw something, some material that they just really think looks interesting and useful, and they would like to use it. Well, then the question's a little different. You have to decide, is this really something that we want in our school, and what are we going to push around or get rid of in order to make room for it? Because mostly our school schedules are probably quite full already. Balance the assets and the liabilities of this new possibility. You have to decide what's going to work. Give you an illustration. I remember in 2010, Rod and Staff produced a record-keeping course. How many of you use Rod and Staff's record-keeping course? All right, very few. There might be various reasons that you don't. One might be that the section on income tax uses U.S. tax forms, and Revenue Canada's are different. So You have to, maybe that's a reason why it just doesn't fit. So you have to decide, will this work? What balance the assets and the liabilities? On the other hand, are the benefits of the illustrations of a Mennonite lifestyle greater than the inconvenience of the wrong tax forms? One has to decide that. What's important? Put a detailed, once you've decided that here's a product that might just be a good idea, then I would recommend that you put a detailed review process in place for this proposed new curriculum. Appoint possibly two brethren, maybe a board member, again the bookish kind, and maybe one of the ministry. I noticed further this afternoon we have a topic about involving the ministry in the work of the school without making them feel that they're meddling. I think one way to do that is to give them something to do. And this would be one, is incorporate their skills and usefulness in this process. They are certainly, there is Bible tone to be evaluated. Another thing could do is in this assignment is to possibly include and to appoint a sister teacher, especially if it's lower grade material. Get their input. What do they think about it? Especially long-term teachers. Teaching experience is valuable. Define the job of this committee. Good content to look for. Are they looking for Bible tone? Are they looking for Anabaptist Mennonite lifestyle? Does this material have patriotism in it? And again, if we reach for the fundamentalist publishers, and they have many good materials, but they are more likely to have a certain degree of patriotism in it, maybe depending what for literature a person would reach for as well. Of course, in science, there's evolution, but although I suppose we're probably fairly well equipped with science courses that are free of evolution, I don't think that should be a problem. Even other lesser obvious things, maybe this is one you didn't think about. How about feminism? I remember that the accounting book that we used before the rod and staff came out, and this maybe have been my imagination, but there were different times in the illustrations given in this book of a husband and wife discussing family finances. But I would say at least it was a husband and wife. But it was maybe my imagination, but you could just about count on it. It was the wife that had the better judgment in the problem. And well, you have to decide what to do with that, whether that matters to you or not. Not saying that our sisters don't have good judgment on financial matters. But we do expect brethren in the general to be the leaders in the matter. So something to think about. What features does this new course have? A curriculum is a tool. We all buy tools for our work. I just heard recently about many years ago, someone bought his son a farm, and he told him, you know, if he has a hammer and a vice grip and a handsaw, that is all he needs. Well, most of us have gotten beyond that, and, you know, we just buy more and more and more tools. Maybe we have more DeWalt tools than what we really need, but on the other hand, we find them very useful. Do you only look at how new a tractor is and what color the paint is? Or do we look at whether it for sure has a PTO and a three-point hitch and the type of transmission, how many gears forward and reverse? Is it four-wheel drive? And we even think about the comforts like a cab and a heater and air conditioning and seat suspension. All right, can we apply some of that to curriculum? These amenities cost money, but we pay it. We don't think that it makes us more lazy. Maybe it does, but we get more done. We think we do. And maybe that thought applies to curriculum as well. Is there a good teacher's guide that goes with this curriculum? Is the teacher's guide friendly to use? Does it have extra ideas and suggestions in the teacher's guide that makes it easier for the novice teacher to look like he's smarter than his students? Those are useful tools. What about a review pattern and tests? Does this course, does it review periodically through the book? Are there tests with it? I know we should write our own tests, but it doesn't happen. And lesson sizes, are the lesson sizes appropriate? You know, if you're buying a tractor, you know, a 200 horsepower tractor, it might be nice, but if you're just going to run an 8-foot bush hog with it, do you really need it? And again, if you have this wonderful science curriculum, it's just loaded with all kinds of things, but you only have this much time in your schedule for science. Do you need it? So, you know, why buy it? Why bother with it? Maybe you could make do with something less. So those are things to think about as we think of the features that a curriculum offers. What really do we want? Extra activities that are suggested in it. How much time is this going to really put in? Compatibility we should think about. Grade level. Experienced teachers sometimes point out to us that the level on the cover, while probably an accurate assessment by the publisher compared to their other products, it may not be in tune with other curriculum that you are using. In other words, grade one in this curriculum might not be the same as grade one in this other. Well, grade one is probably about all alike, but let's say more like 4 and 5. Grade 4 to this publisher is more like grade 5 to this publisher. So think that's something that should be evaluated. Grade level. And also compatibility to existing curriculum. I'm repeating what was said before. If you have already studied Central America twice, do you really want to do it again just because this book looks so interesting and it's done in such a nice way? And thinking again also, yes, this is a good book, this is a good product, but what must we drop in order to accommodate it? And interestingly, even at our school, we still have not incorporated all of EMP's Bible curriculum because we still like to teach Mennonites in Europe 1 year out of 3 from grades 8, 9, and 10. And so it just, that has quite came up different times years ago already, but the feeling was we want to include this. And so the one Bible course just doesn't get used. Maybe that seems like a wrong balance, but I guess we try to find a balance. Another thing for this review committee to discover more particularly, I'm talking about not the broader curriculum committee that got together to discuss curriculum in general, but the two that were appointed to thoroughly analyze this particular product. Cost. We live in a real world where things cost money. What will be the total cost of this? There are one-time costs, like the textbooks and the teacher's guide, and then there might be annual costs, like test booklets and workbooks and so forth. For some school material, this can add up. And so what will be the total cost? I suppose by now, I mean, the publishers all have good quality bindings and good books in a physical sense, but maybe that is still something to think about at times, particularly if you already have a book from that publisher that didn't hold up long. Well, then you want to think about that. How recently did you purchase the curriculum that you are using? Here is this wonderful science revision now, but did you just buy the previous course. Did you just buy it a few years ago? Do you really want to update it already? I think that's a realistic question to ask. In what condition are the books that you are replacing? Are they getting bad? Is it time to replace them? Or is this an expense that could wait a few years yet? I would also think this committee should set themselves a time limit. How long is it going to take us to look at this curriculum? You know, if there's no time limit and it's not important, but not least not as important as some other things, it just goes on the shelf. It doesn't happen. So set a deadline. When this review is to be complete, give enough time that you can do it right, but soon enough that you don't forget. And remember, you want, if you decide to purchase this product, you want to get it at a discount. April, I think, is the discount month. Then get together and talk about it, and hopefully the two of you will be, or two or three of you will be unified enough that you can make a definite recommendation to the school board. You know, it's not nice then when, okay, you've gone through all this work and the two brethren come to the school board meeting and say, yes, we have reviewed the product. He thinks we should, he thinks we shouldn't. Well, then that's difficult. If at all possible, come to the board meeting with an agreement, a recommendation, this is what we think. And that will make it, the board can still ask questions. But it's best if they can come with a recommendation. One more meeting. Hopefully it will just be part of a regular board meeting where you make this report and a decision is made whether or not to purchase. Not every board member will be completely literate regarding the curriculum. I think we accept that as a fact. But at least somebody took the time to seriously consider the books, and it is the board's decision, not the teacher's. So a few other benefits of a literate board. A new teacher has a problem. He says it's the fault of the curriculum. Well, is it the curriculum's problem, or is it something else that the board could suggest? But if you don't know your own curriculum, then how would you know? Being another thing is that the board, whether not the whole board probably, but the principal or the chairman, hopefully will be able to help a new teacher pace himself or herself to make the book hold out about right for the school year so that they can cover the material realistically. And related closely to that is being able to help the new teacher develop a realistic daily schedule. And I would recommend that that especially for first-year teachers, that the principal or chairman says, I want to see your schedule. Because if they have only 15 minutes of math 2 days a week, well, you know it's not going to work. And so you ought to, but again, if you're not familiar with the curriculum, you're hardly in a position to evaluate the teacher's time schedule. All right. There'd be a few minutes for a few questions if you have any. I hope I didn't sound like I had all the answers. These were some suggestions. And maybe you have some questions. Maybe you all.
Thank you.
Any comments? I would think there is. There is, I think, Bible history, church history, should always be in the context of secular history, of putting the two together so that you know when you're studying that, let's see, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And how does that relate to the beginning of the Swiss Brethren? Time frame, put that in a time frame. Menno Simons is a little later. I'm thinking of 1525, when we should think of the beginning of the Swiss Brethren, and 1492. And I think there is some history that says that some of those under the persecution in Zurich, there was some discussion among them that, you know, what can we do about this persecution? Maybe we could go to the land across the seas where, I'm not sure, they didn't call them Indians even, but there was a vague understanding in their mind there was unpopulated lands across the ocean. Maybe they could go there because of this intense persecution. God had Columbus discovering America, let's see, 33 years ahead of time. God was preparing a place. So those are, you know, secular history, Bible and church history should always go, I think, should go together. Is that, maybe you have more to add to it. Anything else? All right, you may turn. I'm going to turn and read yet Acts chapter 17, verse 28. I was not given, I didn't ask what time I'm supposed to stop, but it looks like a good time. Acts chapter 17, verse 28, Paul on Mars Hill. And his sermon said, "Forasmuch then, as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone." Now, I missed verse 28 is what I wanted. Sorry. "For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring." Paul here was quoting from the Greek poets. "Certain of your own poets." It indicates a familiarity with a rather broad spectrum of literature. Does this mean that Paul would have recommended any and all to read the Greek poets? Probably not. But I think we could recognize that Paul saw that there's different levels of material for various stages of development, and that is true both physically and spiritually. And may the Lord grant us wisdom as we fulfill our responsibility in providing books for our children to study. Thank you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.